This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine. I welcome Katrina Vandenhoven writing at the Washington Post about Back to the Future. What is to be done with Ukraine? Not a military confrontation, a diplomatic and what you'd have to say at this point, meeting of the minds. It's called Minsk Group. Minsk 1 and Minsk 2. We're back to earlier in the second decade of the 21st century. Katrina, a very good evening to you.
Thank you, John.
A conversation in Minsk, the capital of Belarus. Minsk 1 and Minsk 2, participated in by the then president of Ukraine, also by the presidents of France and the chancellor of Germany and the president of Russia. What did that Minsk group achieve in 2015 that we need to get back to? Good evening to you.
Thank you, John. You know, it achieved a recognition of reality in law. It guaranteed, now did these come to pass, but it guaranteed an independent Ukraine in control of its own borders, with Russian, quote, volunteers removed and the separatists disarmed and Ukrainian military standing down in the Donbas region. And as important, it promised full autonomy for the Russian-speaking, protections for language-speaking region of the Donbas within a decentralized Ukrainian federation written into a revised constitution. But the Ukrainian government in 2015 refused to move forward on autonomy for the Donbas without prior disarmament of the separatists. The Russians refused to withdraw its volunteers, and so on and so on. And the U.S. refused to bring pressure on the Ukrainians to move forward. We're at a different time, John, in the sense that we've seen in this past week a lot of motion, if I might put it that way. I mean, you've had Blinken on the phone with Lavrov again. Macron, I believe, had another phone call with Putin. You've had this UN kind of charade. The Ukrainian president is a different president, Zelensky, and he and other senior officials in Kiev are at this moment playing down the threat of an invasion, warning the panic could harm Ukraine's economy. The British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is laughable. He's planned to tell Russian President Putin in a call to come that Russia needs to step back from the brink, and they may even seize property owned by Russian oligarchs in London. But John, to me, the most interesting story is about the Finnish president. We've talked a lot about Finland and the, you know, the Treaty of Austria 1955, but also the model of Finland as a non-aligned neutral country. But on a call with Putin, this was a few days ago, I think even a week ago on the 21st, this is President Niinistö, who after 10 years has one of the most established connections with Putin among EU leaders. He was on the phone January 21. And during the call, it seems Putin raised the issue of the Minsk agreement, seeking to end the conflict between Ukraine and Russian-backed separatists. And Niinistö at the time said he thought of Putin's Minsk reference as a sideline in their discussion, but it has been featured prominently in Russia's official readout of the call. And the Finnish president said his reading is that the Minsk agreement could be, quote, the very center of the problems now and progress to address the impasse would take us further in a positive way. So I found that interesting in an area of the world which hasn't received as much attention, except for the concern that Finland and Sweden will be eaten up by NATO. But it seems interesting that the Russian readout, which they had a choice as to how to handle, did feature prominently this Minsk agreement.
The Minsk agreement centers on elections in Donbass, especially the two Donetsk and Luhansk republics. And that election was always a centerpiece of the case that Moscow was making. This is many years ago. You know, we're old enough to remember 2015, Katrina. Okay, fine. And as I recall, the Rada, the parliament in Kiev, resisted it. They were always anxious that this is Poroshenko was the president at the time, the very well-to-do man who's under, I think, a legal threat in some fashion for his activities. But in any event, they were always reluctant to go along with it because they argued that it would establish a separate entity. It would be a breakaway republic. But elections is not very much to ask, allowing elections to go forward.
And I think they're at more risk now of a breakup of a country than if there are many nations within a federation, and this would be written within a decentralized Ukrainian federation. Now, it's a compromise, and it requires tough, hard choices on all sides. I mean, the Russians accepting an independent Ukraine, which is key, and the Ukrainians accepting an autonomous Donbas region within the Federation. And then, you know, there are all kinds of possibilities of a treaty, as we talked about on the model of Austria, but a non-aligned. Now, what's hopeful is that in Paris about 10 days ago, 7 years after the Minsk II agreement discussions, Ukraine and Russia held marathon 8-hour talks in Paris, mediated by Germany and France. And it's worth noting, John, that not only do you have a new government in Germany, and it was Hollande in 2015, it's now Macron, who's though out soon, but you also have a different president. As I mentioned, Zelensky is worried about the panic causing harm to the Ukrainian economy, already fragile. Poroshenko, you alluded to, the coffee oligarch or the chocolate oligarch, he's flown back to Kiev,
right,
and he's in the process, I believe, of being indicted.
Yes.
And is in a courthouse. And so Poroshenko was kind of that transitional figure, and reviled in many ways. Zelensky comes in originally as kind of trying to resolve the civil war. And, you know, in the danger in Ukraine, which my colleague Lev Galinkin, who's been on your program, has reported well for many outlets, is it's not clear who's in control. Zelensky was a novice. He was famous for being a comedian. He's, I think, handled things as well as possible. But the nationalist forces have, over time, since 2013-14, vetoed certain decisions, played a background role in critical ways, the kind of Ukrainian nationalist forces. So where the compromise is, and the same can be said about Russia, my colleague Anatole Levin had a good piece at thenation.com yesterday just reminding us, though there's some difference about this, that Putin, soft authoritarian, doesn't have a free hand. I mean, there are those in Russia, in the establishment, in its very own blob, who are more hardline. And the Times, the New York Times, finally had a piece about sort of the three hardliners who may play a role, having decided in these past years that the only person in Russia was Putin. They've realized there are forces and constellation of forces that need to be paid attention to.
You mentioned Anatole Levin. Quickly, Katrina, one of Anatole's recommendations is that there be a treaty, a neutrality treaty, in some fashion, signed by Moscow, Kiev, and Brussels, to declare that Ukraine will not try to join NATO for 10 or 20 years. Is that practical to you? We have about a minute.
I think it is. I think it is. This idea of a moratorium on NATO expansion. First of all, John, there's a delusion to our conversations because according to the very charter, NATO charter, Ukraine could not be admitted because of the territorial issues and even the economic fractiousness. But I do agree with Anatole that it's a creative diplomatic possibility that should be on the table.
And it would answer some of the concerns that Moscow has. The advance of NATO has been a longstanding issue. But Minsk, too, I recommend everybody. It's not obscure. It was resolved at the time
as
a way forward. The Rada at that time refused. In my memory, but Poroshenko was president. Things have changed.
That's right.
Zelensky is a different player, and France and Germany were involved. Two
That's
critical
right.
players. Right now, I'd have to say Germany's a dissenter. Katrina Vandenhoevel, writing in the Washington Post about the possible road out. Russia says it's not attacking. Ukraine says Russia's not attacking. That looks like agreement. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.